AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, bringing you another weekly look at the world of non-league football. This week, we're highlighting the variety of non-league. We speak to a coach who's helped shape many a rough diamond in the lower reaches of the pyramid, and now faces a tough task in his new role. As joint manager at Meridian VP, he's sitting bottom of the division in Step 6. They are the highest-ranked club still without a league win this season in non-league. He knew this before he took on the role, and since then, he's managed to get 3 points on the board with 3 draws, but he still strives for that elusive win. Daryl Queeney, though, hopes it's not too far off. With the 3-up campaign prevalent across many news channels and the National League division so tight, we turn to an expert in those tiers. Rob Worrell of NL Full Time joins me to offer his insight, knowledge and take on the magic that is non-league. Matt Badcock then from the non-league paper helps me with a news roundup this week, as well as providing details on what is to come in this weekend's non-league paper. So time then to sit back, relax and let's get matters underway. Now, most weeks, our guests are those clubs on a high. They're tabletoppers, they're cup runners, they're booming community setups. But in reality, we know that life's not like that, is it? We do report on the darker issues affecting our game, such as clubs in crisis, managers falling off the merry-go-round, etc. But week in, week out, there are others who, whilst not in immediate harm, spend hours seemingly pushing uphill whilst trying to enjoy their football. So I thought it's time this season to celebrate them and hopefully give them a little bit of extra sparkle to maybe, just maybe, turn their season around. So my next guest is, he's fairly new to the managerial role at his club. They're the last one in the top 6 tiers of the pyramid without a league win. He took the job knowing all of that and he's had an early positive impact too. But there's now 3 points that win still eludes them. To tell us more, it's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show manager at Meriden VP, Mr. Daryl Queeley. Well, welcome, Daryl.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me on.
I've known about you for years as a player. Sort of, you know, I'm a bit of a non-league badgehead, as I normally call them. You know, I sort of follow stuff. But I mean, first up, bottom of the Southern Counties East Division 1, Step 6, no wins all season. What makes you take on this role to start with?
I'm crazy. To be honest with you, I've known Dwinder for quite a long while. You know, we caught up. I took a bit of time out of the game. Obviously, being at Forest Hill Park for several years. I really enjoy helping out local community clubs. That's my pattern. And a lot of people have ambitions to go on to do the steps. I have more interest in developing young men who need to get men's experience and push on through the leagues. I feel like developing players is one of my strongest attributes. So this is an opportunity again for me to do that. Bottom of the league, yes, it does seem a bit crazy. I've managed to escape relegation on several occasions throughout my life with clubs that are struggling, and I aim to continue to do that. Really,
And you know, I certainly don't want to diss your playing career, but I sense that you enjoy being a coach more than you enjoy being a player because, as you say, you get the best out of some talent. You've picked up players throughout your career. I think I first came across you as a coach when you were at Tower Hamlets Youth. Picking up really young players, players playing at steps five and six, moving them on, sort of just
knocking those little edges off them, so they go on and play it. Step one, step two, even in the pro game.
Yeah,
there aren't many that sort of go into management and say, "Oh, yeah, you know, it's second best to play in." But I sense it's the best thing for you.
Yeah, yeah, no, listen, I hung up my boots at probably 27, 28 because developing players is something I really enjoy. There's a lot of boys with ability who don't have the brain to play, and trying to transfer football knowledge onto young players and watch them fly up the leagues is really important. And it's funny, and I appreciate you mentioning that, because I'm not someone who goes on Twitter and sings my own praises about the players.
You're very hard to find, to be honest. It's only through my old connections that, you know, Tristan Cropley, that old friend of the show, helped me out here. But you just keep your head down and do what's right for football.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm trying to do. You know, when I look on TV and I see players I've coached on TV, that's my trophies. Mm. When I look at, you know, step one, two, three, four, five, even, to know that a player was, you know, I got a player from step seven, now he's playing step five, that's a trophy to me. If I got a player that was released from an academy side and I got him back in the game, that's a trophy to me. It can be difficult being at clubs where you can't build, because it would be really nice to, you know, to win a real trophy and to really compete at the top. But it's very hard to get, you know, 23, 24 very good players together when you're always working with no budget, you know. So, my trophies are those players that push on and do well and never come back, never drop back down. That's something I'm proud of as well.
And you come into Meridian. How many games you had in charge now?
So I've gone in as joint manager with Dwinda. That's the role I've been offered. Right. So I've gone in and we're doing it together. I've gone in for, is it five games, four games?
I think it was five. I had five. I just wanted it. I thought you might know. But I mean, of that, you defeat on Wednesday night against, ironically, one of your old sides, Forest Hill Park, 2-1. But prior to that, a run of three draws, which was unforeseeable, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was four draws technically. So it was three league draws, one cup draw with a penalty win. Right. So we drew three league games. So when I came in the new year, there was 0 points. We've drawn three of those league games, and we possibly could have got one or two more points, if I'm being honest, but I don't want to be greedy. We then drew with Tower Hamlets in, again, another one of my previous clubs. We drew with them, but beat them on penalties. And yeah, the loss the other night to Forest Hill Park / SC Dons was the first loss since I've arrived. And, you know, and the boys, you know, they haven't really let me down, to be honest.
And you mentioned there, Davinder Tamne. For those that don't know, Meridian VP, it's got a great backstory. Set up originally by four brothers, I think a five-a-side team. It didn't really become a full club until 1995. Then there was the merger with Valley Park FC in 2011. That brought about the VP appendage to the Meridian name. And through all of that, Davinder, he's the chairman, as you say, joint manager now with you, but he's been part of it all the way through. I mean, if you wanted to work with someone to build up a club, someone that, I mean, he probably lives, breathes everything Meridian, doesn't he?
He does. He does. I mean, the people like Dwinda are invaluable in football, to be honest. Some people don't understand what it's like to be so heavily involved in every aspect of a club. And I was previously at Forest Hill, so I know what it's like to be involved in every aspect of the club. And it is not easy, you know, being involved in, you know, sorting out the food, sorting out the football, sorting out everything, the training. Dwinda's been doing a marvellous job, you know, and anyone who's at a club like a community club, you know, we're talking about where we're not getting 50, 60 fans through the door to pay for the referees to play for the pitch. and has stayed in that division has done a fantastic job. You know, I know there's been several reprieves over the last few years, but even then, just to stay afloat,
just to keep the lights on, it's just
exactly. And people, a lot of people comment and say, "Oh, you know, they've only done this or they've only done that," but I don't think people understand what it's like to compete against clubs with budgets, you know, every single week and make those games competitive. You know, it's a task itself.
But I think the combination of the two of you together, you know, someone with your ability as a coach and bringing on those players, you see the best in people and you get the best out of people as well. I'm looking at it and I'm excited and I'm not even a fan.
Well, it's not too late, you know.
Well, I've not long ago I left my club after what 20 lots of years. So you know, I'm still in the market.
Go get down, mate. No, Meridian is a very good club for me in terms of the location. It's accessible for young players from several different areas. The training facility at the ground, marvellous. And then we have a big, wide, flat surface. For me, who developing players, it helps so much. And being, you know, I've been at Laderwell for the last five seasons, and hats off to SC Dons for being top of the league playing in that ground. And I know, and I want to mention Lucian Borough, who have done exceptionally well there in the last few years as well. But it's a very tough ground to play at, because you have to get that balance of physicality, playing styles correct. You might go and get the best, you know, 15 most talented players you know, but they're not going to be the best players to play on that pitch, right? And then when you get players that are really good at home, you go away on a big pitch that's got lovely grass on it, and then you realise you can't pass the ball. It's a very tough gig. So my hat goes off fully to those guys at SC Dons, and also Lucian, who were able to get that right. It's something I really found hard. Where at now Meridian, I can really start working on a style of football. So when we're at home, it's going to be something, you know. And then there's a lot of ground that where we go away where we can also start implementing a very similar style, and we kind of have to adapt to matches like Ladywell. But it's a lot easier for me.
And I was going to ask, because you in the Charlton, the South East London sort of area, there's been great talent come through from for decades. But it's, when you're picking, when you're looking for the, you know, what is it you're looking for? What do you spot in a player that means you know that he can go on?
Honestly, so if I talk about my previous seasons where I've pushed a lot of players through, sometimes we are picking from a group of players that we didn't choose. So sometimes we've had to have open trials or just invite players down blind that have applied to come and train with us. And then it's all about character then. Which ones are willing to listen, which ones are coachable, which ones are going to turn up every week. And then it's very difficult because lots of the boys now, they can dribble and they can turn. They can dribble, they can turn. Can you pass? Can you shoot? It's like everyone is being born with a ball, their own ball, and they've had their own ball with them till they're 11, and now they've been asked to share that ball. It's very difficult for a lot of players. For me, I'm looking at players, are you going to learn how to share that ball? You know, because that's the first thing. And then once I get a player that wants to learn, my formula would be, okay, who is he like that I've coached before? Who is he like that is on telly? How close can I get his game to that player? Because you are now capable physically of what that player is. So there's no point being 6'2" and wanting to play like Messi. You're not capable. You don't have the same attributes. You now need to make sure you're winning all your flick-ons, you're holding up that ball. And these are the things that I'll work on, their individual games. And then once they've got that, the sad thing is, at a club like Forest Hill Park or Meridian, once you do that to a player, generally, 3 or 4 weeks later, you can say goodbye to them. But it's tough.
Mm. And what about, from your time as a player to now, how's coaching had to change? Because, the kids coming through are different.
Yeah. They are. they're very different.
I'd imagine when you were playing, you were the sort of player that if you didn't like what the manager was saying, you'd tell him. Do you get that now?
No. You don't, but you get the sulks. You get the sulks. They won't turn up or they'll give you 30%. And that's how they'll communicate with you, or you'll catch them whispering in the corner and then you have to ask them to talk up. There's a lot of honesty has gone from the game. Mm. Sometimes we say a lot of honesty has gone from the game, or this has happened in the game, but I think this is in society. Mm. So whatever happens in society is feeding down to the game, right? It's not a game problem. It's a society problem where, I even said it to the boys the other night, I'm sure you guys have sent 1,000,001 texts tonight, and we're sitting in the changing room just looking at our phones, can't talk. We're not talking to each other. And they need certain, they just can't open up and have certain conversations with each other. So, we were able to talk to our managers or to be insulted. That's another thing. Like, a lot of young players take advice and coaching as an insult.
Mm.
Check your shoulder next time. Maybe open up, take it on your back foot next time for me there. And they look like they want to cry. And it's like, mate, this is just some advice. No, but we're just trying to. It's like, mate, let's get on the half turn, check your shoulder, and that's going to help you and me. And they find it really difficult. So there's a lot of having to communicate one-to-one. There's a lot of communicating on the phone, sending messages, having conversations. And it's just different ways of communicating with these young boys. And once you have their trust, then you can maybe start telling them things on the pitch. But it's really hard to, advise. And I say advise, it's crazy. It's hard to advise these players, not even coach, advise them until you have a proper relationship with them. It's very difficult.
Yeah. Well, why are you? You've played 21 games, 3 points on the board, 13 goals, 52 against, 7 points behind Wellington above you. They've got a game in hand. Are they your first target, or is it getting the best out of these players?
I'll be lying to you if I said we're not looking at Wellington as our first target, as the team that we want to catch. Mm. Okay, we've seen many reprieves in this league over the last decade. Mm. But if anyone's gone, it's been a bottom team. Okay, if anyone's ever gone on a few occasions, someone has gone, it's been the bottom team. Mm. So you don't want to be in that position, being the bottom team. I've never been in it. I don't want to be that bottom team. I've been in the bottom three, but I've never been the bottom team. We have to catch them. We have them to play twice. We do respect them. We do know they will possibly be improving as well. So it's going to be very, very, very tough. But I've said to the boys that somehow we need to try and aim to be the best side we can possibly be. So forget being a team that avoids relegation. I think at some point, if we're being realistic, to get off that bottom spot, we're going to have to show some playoff form. Mm.
You got the opportunity this weekend, though, haven't you? Away to Clapton Community, we're just sort of on the edge. They've got playoffs in their sights, tight up the top. On the back of your recent results since you've come in, maybe this is the one.
you never know which is going to be the one, because there's playing styles as well. You know, we could go and get our five wins off teams in the top, and then drop points at teams in the bottom. That's how it works at this league. So we're not taking any games for granted, or assuming that this is going to be the one that's we're going to win, or this one's easier than that one. I've been in this league long enough to respect every single team equally and understand playing style sometimes are a factor. So we're still working out the teams that we could possibly beat, you know. We are improving. We will be going into the game trying to win. We have to go into every game trying to win until the end of the season. And we don't have the luxury of, you know, trying to nick a point here or nick a point there. We have to be honest and, you know, and pretend like we're trying to get in the playoffs, which we're nowhere near, but we have to find that form to get off the bottom spot, you know. So, we're going to go into this game, captain of a very well-run side, great support down there, great atmosphere down there. We just got to lap that up and try and improve from our last game, and that's what we've got to try and do every week, just keeping improving, focusing on us, and hopefully we start, you know, getting some points on the board or more points on the board.
Well, look, we've only spent a short time with you, and I'm already motivated, so hopefully the lads will be as well. Daryl, it's been a pleasure to get you on the Non-League Football Show. I wish you well. I will be keeping an eye on the results, and hopefully we'll speak to you again very soon.
All right, thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, we've been doing this show for 19-odd seasons, and it's evolved over the years, and in that time, thankfully, we've seen many podcasts spring up around us, focusing on non-league, all promoting the game at our level and the game that we love, and as they have, we've skewed our focus a little bit more to allow for some of these others to rise alongside, and we do cover the National League, but in a different way to my next guest, and he does it well, does it very well. So it's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show, presenter of the NL Full Time, Mr. Rob Worrell. Welcome, Rob.
A very good evening to you, Tim. Great to speak to you.
Well, it's good to get you on. First up, I said, yeah, we've been going 19-odd years. I think I've been in the Non-League game for 30-odds. In terms of personally covering Non-League, I think I've probably known you, nigh on two decades as well. You've got some experience behind you.
Yeah, a little bit. I guess being sort of somewhat attached to Aldershot Town, who are the longest serving team in the National League now, been done various media roles as well. So, it's been a fair old while. It's definitely double digits since we met, that's for sure.
And not only full time, I mean, how long's that been going now as well?
I think we're in our ninth season now. There's two chaps who started it, bless them, have moved on now, but we've got sort of, it's a little bit of a slow revolving door, really. But Luke Edwards, who produces and edits it now, was the host for most of the years, and I was a regular on the panel, but for the last couple of seasons, I've hosted it. And we get brilliant insight from Dickie Wharton, who's media at Telford, and from Christian James, who's all over the stats and the PA system at Boston, and young Joe Pope as well, who does the off-the-line blog. So they're the regulars on it.
And then you have Brian Flynn on most recent pod, and I think he's been doing it probably longer than two of us combined, isn't he?
I know. Do you know what? I've been meaning to, a bit like you were meaning to ring me, I've been meaning to get Brian on for quite a while, and I was so glad that I did. He's an absolute font of knowledge, isn't he? And he's so good at dates.
Brian's a media man at Altrincham. He's been on the show in the past, but if people don't know, and he just got that memory as well for everything.
Yeah, absolutely phenomenal it is. And he was talking about the very years that certain teams went up to the Football League, and what year kind of the last time they changed it and there was two teams promoted, etc. Yeah, phenomenal, really, really good, and a really, really nice guy, Brian, and also a wonderful club as well, Altrincham. I think they're really, really well liked. They're doing things the right way. They're back full time for a couple of seasons and going nicely.
Yeah, and anyway, I wanted to get you on because you know, you're the specialist, shall I say, of those top three divisions, the top two tiers of non-league. And on the back of the three up campaign and how tight all those divisions are, I wanted to get your thoughts. The three up campaigns, that's nothing new to you and I. But I sense there's a different impetus. There's a greater cohesion to it this time around. Although, at the end of the day, it's going to be a decision of the turkeys voting for Christmas, of course.
Yeah, unless of course, they show a little bit of foresight or maybe the regulator gets involved. I don't know about you, Tim, but I maybe got the feeling that that it's happening formally now because they want to try and just see if they can get around the table before the regulator gets involved. Because when the regulator comes in, going to have an awful lot of things on their agenda, and this might slip down the pecking order a bit.
Yeah, and it is important that people do get round tables. And I just think, you know, the National League, for all its critics, it is a very professional league.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I'm obviously got that elite status, didn't it, during the COVID times. But it's been, you know, I mean, if you take the National League now, 24 teams, 22 of them are full-time professional. And it goes beyond that because we'll probably come on to talk about them, you know, in more detail. But there's quite a few full-time teams in the South and the North now as well. So they really have got their ducks in a row. I just personally, I'm quite a purist. I just want the pyramid to be consistent all the way down. So I actually think that they need to sort out the extra promotion place. They need to take one off between League Two and League One as well. I don't really understand that one or how that one came about, you know. So we do need to get it consistent for sure. Although the one little tweak that might have to go, I don't know if they do get a third promotion place. It's something they may need to look at their current playoff structure, the promotion, you know, finals at the end of the season. I think we're all really quite concerned about them when they came in, but they've proven to be a real hit. Fantastic. I have to admit, I love them now, and I'd be.
I was exactly like you. I was exactly like you. It's like, what, seven places? What's all that about? But I mean, how often does the season just reignite? Even at this stage of the season?
Yeah, I mean, at this stage of the season, so where are we, you know, we're talking mid-February. There are very, very few teams in any of those three national leagues that don't still have something to play for, i.e., you know, trying to avoid relegation, trying to reach the playoffs or going for a title.
I think the strongest argument about the three-up campaign at the moment is probably the strength of non-league clubs on and off the pitch because, you know, of course, we report about clubs in crisis, you do as well, but the majority of clubs are in great shape and they go on when they do get promotion, they go on, they move on up and, as we've seen so often, maybe even go on to get further promotion once in the EFL.
Yeah, absolutely. You've obviously got Wrexham and Stockport, you know, really pushing at the moment to try and get up to the Championship. And several other teams have made that sort of double rise since joining the EFL. And I think we've still, I'm pretty sure, pretty confident in saying that no team's still gone up from the National League and come straight back down again, which is remarkable, really, you know. So, you know, whenever I look at League Two, as I do, you know, fairly frequently, you see the teams that have recently gone up or a couple of years ago, you know, still pushing at the right end of the table. And traditionally, a lot of the teams that fall through the trapdoor and come down, they actually struggle in their first season or two in the National League. That's pretty consistently been the case. It isn't this year, but look at the two clubs that have come down. They're two of the first ones to drop back down, Sutton and Forest Green. And they know what football at this level is like. So they've been a little bit more prepared and they're both kind of around mid-table or top half.
Yeah, the structures are right. The National League, though, you mentioned, you know, there are, you know, there's a couple of part-timers still in there, though. It's a division where any club can still beat any other club, which for me is one of the keys to its success, too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's notoriously hard to predict. I do a prediction competition every week with a mate, and I also sometimes join in with Luke Walsh on his podcast. And and it's notoriously difficult. You can go with all the logic. If you picked on a Saturday 12 logical predictions, you'd be very lucky if six of them came in, and that's pretty much how it is. I'm watching Aldershot most weeks against whoever they're playing, or commentating on them rather. I'm watching a pretty good Aldershot Town team. They're unbeaten in 10 games. Admittedly, five of those are in cup competitions, but they're together. Their performances are pretty good. They threaten to win. They look like winning most weeks. And they're 19th, Tim. You know, it's staggering, really. And you're absolutely right. Despite being 19th, they've actually got the best record against the current top seven in the National League at the minute, but one of the worst against the bottom seven. So it works itself out in all sorts of different ways, but I absolutely love it. And the best thing I can say is, what are we talking now? 13, 14 years now in the National League. I've been watching it, and I'm going to grounds that I've been to before. I'm seeing teams that I've been to before, but it's always got a freshness about it. Mm. It's always competitive. You can never, ever rock up and think, I know how this game's going to go today.
Yeah, and at top level, it's so tight that, a new manager bounce, there could be an injury crisis, string of wins put together. It could change the look of the table very, very easily. But do you think, so I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, yeah, there will be changes. But then I'm also then realistically thinking, maybe those current standings are pretty much how we might expect them to see come the end of the season in May.
Yes, I agree. There's a lot of logic behind that, and I've just said logic goes out the window with the National League. But I do think that the title in the top division will be competed for just really whether it's between three or four teams for me. Mm. Oldham, everybody was ready to write them off 2 or 3 weeks ago, but they've just gone last week back-to-back-to-back. Three away games, three wins, 9 points, and they're forcing themselves back into the picture. But York, Forest Green and Barnet have been consistently in that top three all season. You know Dean Brennan. He is hell-bent on winning it this season because he's just fed up of playoff heartache. Forest Green may not have the bigger squad, but they've probably got the best quality in depth. And York City, well, brilliantly managed by Hinch. Some real, real talent in there. And one or two eyebrows were raised, weren't they, at the signing of Josh Stones, who they really pulled the rug from underneath Oldham with that one, didn't he? He was a Wigan loanee at Oldham, and they signed him. And he goes and smashes in a hat-trick at the weekend. A perfect one as well, by the way, Tim.
Wow. I didn't realise that.
Yeah.
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he's told everybody.
absolutely, yeah. So it's really, really competitive. I'm not sure what's happening overall with the attendances. They're very, very healthy. That current structure with the promotion finals at the end probably play their part in really keeping those attendances boosted in the last third of the season, where traditionally, historically, they used to drop off.
Yeah, it was interesting that those really pushing for promotion maybe didn't see the FA Cup or the FA Trophy as a big carrot this season, though.
It does appear that way. Nobody sends a team out, do they, to want to lose a match, that's for sure. But it did look a little bit like that with the three or four of the clubs battling at the top end of the National League, that's for sure. And then there are other teams, a few, not many, that have never ever played at Wembley. Yeah. And they're now, they've prioritised it. They've picked their strongest sides. A la the Crystal Palace manager in the Premier League, who he's picking his strongest side in every cup competition because he knows his job is to keep them in that Premier League and try and win a cup. And, for some of the managers and some of the teams and some of the supporters at National League level, the FA Trophy might not turn too many heads in the early rounds. But I tell you, once you get down to this Final Eight, Final Four, and the teams that are left in it are desperate to get to Wembley.
Yeah, and if we said that the top tier is tight, you look at National North, you look at National South, they're just the same in the South. I mentioned a few weeks back that I thought once Dorking took the top spot, I couldn't see anybody taking it back. What are your thoughts?
It's very, very tight. What's really standing out for me is that the vast majority of those full-time clubs in the North and the South are right up there. Six of the top seven in the National League South, Worthing, the one side who are up there, and do you know what, on points per game, they're in the best position at the minute. Yeah. They're second, but they've got those games in hand over Dorking, who are above them. And I know their manager Agata is calling for them to go part time, whether they go up or not this season as well. Terrific race. You've got Boreham Wood there, who a bit like Dorking, have been up at the higher level recently. They've got a manager who's a serial winner and knows what he's doing. Eastbourne Borough going well full-time this season as well. Maidstone and Torquay. Truro massively overachieving, so are Western Supermare. But all of those eight teams are still, they still can't really be written off from the title race. I think it'll come from the top six. And if you push me on it, I'd say it'll be between Dorking, Boreham Wood and Worthing.
Mm. And then in the north, I mean, the Chester story could be one of those tales that we tell for years, couldn't it? And how you can turn around a season that looks like it wasn't really happening.
Absolutely. And one or two of us commenting on the National League North picked Chester to win the league this year. And then we're promptly left kind of 10, 12 games in with a lot of egg on our face. And as you say, they've rightly turned it round. They've risen to the top. I think Scunthorpe would have been really strong favourites at the start of the season. But don't forget Phil Brown as well at Kidderminster. They're not out of it. You've got teams like Chorley and Curzon overachieving. And, I mean, what a story it would be if Brackley could come through and actually win it. Because if you take the Dean Brennan scenario at Barnet and playoff heartache, just triple it, really, for Brackley every single season in the playoffs. And they desperately would love to win it. But for me, it'll be between those three I've mentioned, Chester, Scunthorpe and Kidderminster. But it's going to be so many twists and turns over these last few months, Tim.
Yeah. And why do you think all three divisions are so competitive this season, though?
Well, that's a really, really good question. It's really difficult, isn't it, to gauge sometimes whether standards are improving or not. You know, I've had one or two people currently or were previously involved in National League football that have said that they don't think the standards is good this year. And I'm talking about the top division specifically there. That's an interesting one. I don't know, how do you actually measure it, you know? Is it to do with the total number of points, you know, between top to bottom or certain positions in the league? All I do know for sure, Tim, is that to get to that level, to kick on again, you've seriously got to look at the real fine percentages, and a lot of clubs are concluding that they need to go full time. But you've got to be careful in making that decision. You may not have the fan base, you may not have the infrastructure, and if you try and do it too quickly and too soon, as we've seen all too painfully for a few clubs in the past, it doesn't always work out.
Yeah, and you speak to players, staff, managers, chairman, etc. Every week. Nowadays, it's all very different from even a decade ago. It's just more professional, and that includes all the way down to step six and step seven. The game's changed, but I think the game's changed for the better.
I think it has. That you're always looking at fine margins. I've got a little bit of a bugbear, really, for me, one that I think that teams and managers should be taking on more. And you won't hear this one talked about very often. And it goes all the way back to Brian Clough. And it's to do with the dissent and the respect that you show referees. Mm-hmm. All these fine margins they're looking at that affect 1, 2, 3, 5%. But when a player gets, he racks up suspension through a number of yellow cards or he gets sent off, it's going to cost the team. It's going to hit them directly with the availability of that player, potentially for the rest of that game and then future games as well. And I don't see anybody out there right now briefing their players to just accept decisions. Shut up, accept it and get on with it. Tim, you know as well as I do that referees, believe it or not, listeners, they are human beings, right? And human nature, if you are getting on at a referee, the minute he's got a 50-50 decision to make, he's going to the other team. I'm really big on this. I don't know whether you think I'm
I'm
talking
completely with you. Completely with you. It's like, you know, sometimes you've got to pick your battles, and your battle's got to be with the football rather than the officials around you, because if you think they're having a bad game, you are too.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, don't get me wrong, I played 25 years myself, and I understand the passion, I understand the frustration. But what we're seeing now is referees waving around yellow cards just for somebody protesting against decision. They're not necessarily even, you know, they're not necessarily even swearing. They're just standing there, arms outstretched. They may be letting out one squeal or whatever, but we all did that, you know.
Yeah.
So I do feel for the players. I feel for the managers as well. But I think they're missing a trick. And I really do think that, as Brian Clough said back in the day, let the referee do his job, you do yours.
Well, maybe in 10 years' time, they'll be quoting Rob Worrell on that as well.
I don't know about that.
It's been great to get you on. Before I let you go, remind everybody where they can hear your dulcet tones more regularly.
Yeah, on the NL Full-Time Podcast. It's most trackable down, really, on X or Twitter, which is at NL Full-Time. And, yeah, I say we're in our ninth year and absolutely loving it. Loving the coverage of the National League. Love this show as well, I've got to say. It's a regular. I've only missed a couple this season. And I love the way that you continue to fly the flag for non-league and give non-league the most fantastic coverage.
Well, it's been a pleasure to get you on, Rob. Look after yourself. Speak to you again soon.
Cheers, Tim.
Time of the week then to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers, and it is time to welcome back once again editor-at-large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Bacot. Welcome back, Matt.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. It's cold, isn't it? It's February. It's proper non-league weather. Exciting bit of the week, though, for me. I don't know if it was as exciting for you. We mentioned it last week that we still didn't know when non-league finals day was. We did hear from the FA this week with confirmation that non-league finals day this year will be another Sunday, a double header for the FA Vars and FA Trophy. I'm hoping that might mean at least short sleeves. Sunday the 11th of May at Wembley Stadium. No quick file match reports for you to do this year then?
No, we've team ahead for... Still have to do stuff for online, but taking away the slight sort of stress of that that Saturday deadline, which was good fun last year. But I think I was still eating my my lunch when the trophy final kicked off last time, but I shouldn't complain. No, it's, yep, just say Sunday, hopefully going to be a nice warm day. So it's now just to decide who's going to be there. I know you will. I know I will. I'm sure lots of other people will already be thinking about booking their seats and arranging their weekends and all that kind of thing. And it would just be a case of, yeah, who are the four teams? But as you say, nice to get some confirmations. We can start planning and everyone knows what they're kind of working towards. And it's, it all feels like it'll be here before we know. I'm sure there's obviously lots of football and lots of things to happen and kind of think forward. But when we turn up at Wembley that day, we'll know the majority of the playoff winners, and it'll just be down to the trophy and the VARs to decide what's going to happen there.
Yeah, but it is one of those things that, you know, all non-league fans really should put in the diary, that the gap between the two games isn't that long, actually. It does sort of go very quickly, but it is it's a celebration of the non-league game, really, isn't it? And that's the exciting bit.
Yeah.
Something else we mentioned last week, the National League's three-up campaign, it appears to have got great coverage from the wider media, great support as well from the fans. I saw Mark Ives as well, the National League CEO. He's been replying to some questions on finance this week to rebut some of there's a little bit of negativity on, you know, maybe financial sustainability of clubs that sort of move up through the pyramid and that sort of thing, but answered those quickly on about sustainability and stability, keeping the whole matter of three up in people's minds. It's going to be weeks, if not months, before we have any decision anyway, I think, from the EFL. But it's nice to know that it's been bubbling along still for the rest of the week.
Yeah, I think, I've sort of kind of said before, and I kind of said to Mark Ives when I spoke to him last week for the papers, you kind of don't launch a campaign unless you kind of feel like you're not getting anywhere and you need to really sort of, really put it in the forefront of people's minds. Obviously, that's what they've done last week. It came out and, as you say, got really quite widespread coverage, across all media. You know, because it's such a big issue, it's such a big topic, and it affects so many clubs, both in the EFL and the National League. And it's a conversation and a topic, sorry, we've been talking about for well over 10 years. It's been, you know, it's not a new thing to be talking about 3UP and the sort of the move for it to happen. But obviously, at the minute, it's kind of not. I think maybe last year, maybe thought it was going to get a little bit closer, and there's a feeling that it was maybe going to happen, and obviously we've hit a bit of an impasse again. So, yeah, the campaign has been launched, but there's certainly going to be, as you say, it's going to bubble along for a little while, and I'm sure there's going to be all sorts of different things and different bits that the National League are going to be trying to get across. And I think one of the things that kind of did was sort of noticeable last week, that kind of financial sort of lines started coming out, you know. It sort of sounds like there's lots of talking about the sort of, I think there's sort of talk about like the concerns of the financial, you know, the costs at a National League level. And I found it interesting when I spoke to Mark, that he said that they're introducing their own salary control package, like they have in the EFL, SCMP, sorry, protocol, not package, but yeah, and that's, you know, that's kind of something he says that they're sort of doing anyway to sort of bring themselves in line with that. I think he also, you know, was pointing out about the fact that the sort of state of the clubs in the National League system and how strong that's been. And, you know, they're often inheriting very tricky situations themselves. And, you know, if you by the nature of the, you know, what it is, if you're getting relegated out of the Football League, you're not always coming down in the finest of fettle, are you? So, you know, they have to kind of deal with that and take that on, and then in return, the EFL gaining often, you know, clubs who are, you know, in the vast majority, and there's been the odd case a few years ago where you know, obviously Maxfield didn't kind of go up in the rudest of health, and there was obviously all sorts of issues that came from that. But, you know, clubs are kind of going up and competing, and you know, I think the National League are trying to sort of emphasise that point as well, that they are also doing their own sort of financial stuff, bringing themselves up with the EFL on other things as well, and you know, that's kind of, they're trying to say that's not a reason not to be promoting clubs and offering this extra promotion spot and unblocking this bottleneck that really is kind of, you know, been building up over such a long time.
Yeah, and quite often it's the National League that's almost cleansing clubs and then sending them back in a better state.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, it's you know, sort of accusing the EFL of anything, but it's kind of, you know, they can kind of let their natural selection process kind of filter out some of these clubs, because when they're into issues, they're often, you know, losing on the pitch, and then they come into, you know, whether it's the National League or the National League system generally, it becomes sort of like a non-league issue and non-league problem, and then, you know, they can be sort of coming under different sort of pressures as well. And you know, a few years ago when Macclesfield did come down and it didn't sort of start the season, you know, not saying the National League was running with one club down, and, you know, essentially the EFL was like business as usual. They got two clubs back up, so it's never felt like a sort of completely sort of fair game. Not playing by you're playing an uneven game in the first place, because you are sending up good clubs, and this is, you know, have been going well, building momentum, and this is, you know, arguably is going to only increase that. But we've still so seen how many clubs have been able to kind of come down, regather themselves in non-league football. Often, you know, doesn't always happen overnight, but, you know, often when they really need it, they can sort of take that breather and then get back to winning games, enjoying it again, and start pushing back. And then that's where the argument comes in, how difficult it is to get back. You know, I heard sort of a manager, EFL manager last week saying, oh, you know, we're not going to vote for it. Why would we vote for it? It's so hard to get back out. And it's like, yeah, that's exactly the point. It's like, you know, sometimes you can slip through that trap door, you know, and then it's really, really difficult to get back. And we've said before, you know, look at the history of clubs like Luton. Took them 4 years and didn't even get in the playoffs 1 year in their four seasons that they were down. And it is a really difficult division to get out of anyway, because of how competitive. But then also you're, yeah, you're playing for one automatic promotion spot, and then you're going into the playoffs where we know anything can happen. And you know, you look at Notts County a couple of years ago, they got that record, what would have been a record points all in any other year and gone up any other year, finished second, and then they were, was it 30 seconds from going out in the playoff semis to Bournemouth, and then you got sort of a deflected goal that goes in and suddenly they're in extra time. But you know, that's how sort of kind of close that could have been for them. And you know, after all that season, and you know, I know there's that argument that, well, that would have made that season kind of pretty boring because you know both clubs would have been promoted well before kind of March probably, but you know, that's is that a reason to sort of not do something? I don't know. It seems to me that it's going to be a long kind of battle, and unfortunately in these situations, like in a lot of things in football, self-interest is going to rule the day. And you know, that's what the National League campaign is going to be battling against and fighting against. That's why they're using that tagline of "Put football first," to try and, I guess, get people to think bigger picture. But you know, how will that happens, I guess, remains to be seen, because you know, we saw in COVID when the seasons were talking about being ended, null and voided, all that kind of thing. It wasn't exactly difficult to spot from, you know, what a club's position was. It wasn't exactly difficult to work out where they were in the table and what they thought. You know, the ones who were looking at promotion wanted the season to be worked out in points per game or however it was going to be. The ones who were struggling down the bottom, or you know, not going to middle, kind of, you know, weren't too fussed. And you know, that is the nature of football in many ways, is that people are just thinking through their own situations, and you know, that's where this issue has been for a number of years, because our club's going to sort of vote for it, and that's where, you know, it's that sort of like leadership to be saying, well, actually, no, this is what's happening, rather than everything going down to votes all the time, because then you're you know, different circumstances at different times. I'm sure there's clubs in National League now who'd be thinking, well, if we're in the Football League, well, we'll sort of definitely say, you know, if we get out, we'll definitely say it should be three up, and we'll put our voice to it. But then when they get up there, they think, actually, it might be better to keep it as two, because we need to stay up here. And obviously the finances are so important. You know, the money that you give just for being in the EFL is vastly greater than the National League.
But as you say, we need leaders. I think, you know, often the National League have accusations thrown, and they're leading this way. They're leading with this, and as we've seen in the past, you know, non-league normally leads the way in sort of sorting things out. And I guess that also the big news of the week were more changes at Farsley Celtic, and in a way, non-league has sorted itself out there as well. Fans of the club, they've had a torrid season, haven't they? So far, having to play home games away, feeling left out of conversations, lacking information about everything that's going on. Last weekend that continued. Saturday they lost 6-1 at home to Needham Market, but without Neil Redfern and Pav Singh in the dugout, it later transpired that they'd actually left the club on the previous Thursday, in another bizarre twist. And then on Wednesday this week, there was a board statement declaring that four of the directors, it was Paul Glover, Josh Greaves, John Stubbs, John Wickham, going to be taking over the club, and that Paul Barthrop, the chair, had resigned after almost 6 years there. From afar, it does appear good news for the fans of the club, with a specific pledge in that statement as well, that going forward, the board are going to keep the fans more in the loop. Has non-league won?
Well, I think time will tell, won't it? As you say, you know, they're obviously making the right noises, and what a frustrating period it has been for the fans, because you know that communication hasn't been there, and it's been hard to sort of decipher sometimes what, you know, what has kind of been coming out publicly. You know what it all means, and kind of, is it the whole truth and nothing but the kind of thing? And it's just a situation that's kind of, yeah, been dragging on far too long, and you know, it's not been a great look for anybody really at all. And you know, as you say, the fans, one of the most frustrated seeing their club kind of playing so far away, and I think the attendances have kind of shown that, you know, why would they be travelling down there to watch them? And it's yeah, results obviously haven't been great either, and that's the other sort of concern. But I guess from the fans' point of view, they want to be seeing that hoping, you know, getting that hope back that the club can start moving in the right direction again, and they can sort out their problems. But obviously it's yeah, not just going to happen click of the fingers.
No, but another big boost for the fans was the appointment of David Stockdale as their new manager. Of course, he's no stranger to clubs in turmoil either from his recent spell in charge at Blyth Spartans. He's also got local connections with Farsley. So, again, ticking all the right boxes in terms of what the fans want to hear. It's just seeing that in practice, I guess.
Yeah, exactly that. As you say, he's at Blyth Spartans early in the year, and the turmoil off the field there before their takeover was completed as well. So he's definitely given himself some challenging jobs to start out his managerial career. Obviously, vastly experienced and successful, you know, as a player. Story of going from non-league and going all the way to the top of the game, and been named in the England squad as well, wasn't he, once, I think. And yeah, he sort of kind of always had that interest in non-league, he's saying, through his local connections, and he's been involved in Drawish Spa, and you know he's kind of he's certainly given himself some interesting jobs. But you know, as like with all these things, if you didn't think he could make a difference and have an impact, I'm sure he wouldn't be doing it. So it'll be definitely interesting to see if they can start turning their fortunes around on the field as well.
Yeah, and what's been going on at Farsley Celtic in terms of managers has been interesting, but the managerial merry-go-round fairly quiet this week. I don't know whether that's the return of the gaffer tapes with Dave Anderson, whether that's disrupted the spinning or all the managers concerned. Matt Gray was his first interrogatee, shall I say, in the new series out now on all your usual podcast platforms, and give it a plug. But it has been quiet on the merry-go-round. Among gaffer changes this week that sort of popped up on my radar: Daniel Moses departing Cadbury Athletic, Jay Bateman out at Kingsgrove Athletic, and Matt Reid and Tom Pope have come in been appointed as joint player managers there until the end of the season. That'd be an interesting one to follow. And at Verwood Town, Karoff out, and in comes Jamie Key. But at Kingsgrove, good to see two players with great non-league experience getting the opportunity to, show what their future might be in management.
Yeah, well, there's definitely a fair few goals and success in that management team, isn't there? And Matt Reid's feel like he's been playing forever, and he's still been going, and obviously Tom Pope as well, and yeah, definitely. Again, coming into a situation where the club are not in the greatest position in the table, and I'm sure they'll have been inside the dressing room, know exactly, you know, they'll know exactly what they want to do to try and have a quick impact, because that's what it's going to be about for them to try and get some of those results on the board as quickly as possible and pull them away from that relegation zone sort of area that they're currently in. So, but you know, it's sometimes it's funny how management kind of your management careers work. I'm sure you've, like me, spoken to so many down the years, and often it is kind of these random sort of, you know, when they're not maybe thinking about it, suddenly they're randomly thrust into the dugout, and then they go from there, and you know, many years, 10-15 years later, they're talking to the likes of us about how they started and how it all came about and the mistakes they made and the things they learned really quickly and all that kind of thing. So yeah, good challenge for them for sure.
And yeah, talking of that sort of person, I believe you've been spending some time this week with one Mr. Dean Brennan, manager at Barnet, 2 points clear at the top of the National League.
Well, this is it. And as you're saying about gaffer tapes there, I actually listened to Dave's from sort of a couple of years ago with Dean in preparation to go down there. Yeah, sort of very kindly opened the doors. You know, Dean's like so old school, kind of non-league, that sort of background, as we're saying, started as player assistant places and went player manager at Hemel and got that opportunity. So it's kind of gone on and now in full-time management, trying to push a football club back into the football league. But you know, brilliant, just a brilliant character of the game, and you know, so open, so welcoming to kind of open the doors today and let me have a little insight into a little glimpse into their week and what they prepare and everything that goes into it. And you can sort of see what a good group, you know, just from sort of being in the environment, just very, very briefly, you can sort of get that feeling of what a good group he's got there. And talking about that, you know, the position they've put themselves in, you know, it's kind of getting down to that really exciting bit now, as he says, but it is that crunch time period of the season. Lots of games coming thick and fast. They've got Solihull Saturday, got York next week, and Oldham and Rochdale's coming up as well. But, you know, you're saying how excited, and, you know, they're in a so-called precious situation, but he's saying, you know, we've put ourselves in a situation, so let's go and see what we can do. So, yeah, we've got a bit of a behind-the-scenes in Sunday's NLP, all being well.
Yeah, all very exciting. I mean, we talk about the top of the National League every week, but it's always a twist. There's a new twist every week. You know, Barnet now just 2 points clear at the top with 64 points. Forest Green second on 62, but they've got a game in hand. And then third, York City, 60 points, but they've got a further game in hand. And as you say, Tuesday evening, Barnet hosting York City. It's Harlan Coburn, if someone was writing a thriller about non-league football, this season, I think, is the one that would probably be the Hollywood blockbuster.
Yeah, and hopefully sort of from that sort of selfish neutral point of view, we wanted to go kind of be like this all the way right through to the end. You know, you can imagine if you got to the final day and all three could still win it. If not more, obviously I'm not sort of counting anybody out, but you know, it does at the moment feel like Barnet, York, Forest Green, doesn't it? So, whether Oldham can kind of, you know, be one of those and a few others maybe sort of keep up there and keep sneaking, you know, sneak into that kind of equation as well. But that's kind of sort of feeling you get at the minute possibly. So, we just wanted to kind of go on for as long as possible and be as tight as this, because it is, kind of get your result on the Saturday and you know fans and sure managers are checking the opposition now they got on it immediately as soon as they get in kind of thing to see what it is. It's going to be like that in the coming weeks. There is, you know, a huge amount of football to play. We are sort of into February now, but I think there's you know, Mash got sort of 15 games, which is obviously a huge chunk of the season really, but the fact you can already see this kind of really appetizing title race, promotion race, you know, just sort of there getting ready to sort of burst into even more life than it already has. And it's like that throughout lots of divisions. Lots of divisions are so tight and so interesting. And that's why I always sort of really enjoy this kind of time of the season, because it, you know, it gets down to that really sort of crucial patch. I know it's important all through the year, but you know, where everything, you know, how things fall, your luck, your injuries, suspensions, how they fall, games you got to go to on Tuesday nights, all that kind of stuff. This is where the champions are made, aren't they?
Yeah, and what we love about non-league is that the old phrase that there's more than one way to skin a cat. There's completely different philosophies can pick managers against each other, either defensive minded or goals attacking. We mentioned Matt Reed and Tom Pope. You'd expect that as managers they're going to be going for goals, but you get other clubs. You know, a hat tip here to non-league HQ again. Their stats always informative, and this week keeping us in the loop with Emily. They've secured this week their 17th clean sheet of the league season in the Northern Premier League East. Amazingly, on top of those 17 clean sheets in 29 games, in their 14 home league games this season, they've conceded just 3 goals in total. Yes, they're top of the table, but 2 points clear, and clubs below them have got games in hand, not guaranteed.
Yeah, and that just shows how you can imagine, what they're thinking, what more do you have to do? But yeah, that's going to be, you know, those kind of stats are really going to come into play over these coming weeks, aren't they? And every kind of last minute equaliser, last minute goal you can see to lose, all that kind of thing, they all really sort of, you know, really come into sharp focus now. And there's everything on and every Saturday and every Tuesday night, you know, the majority of Tuesdays as well. So yeah, that's a good base to be going from. You'd rather sort of have that base to be going into this next block of the season, wouldn't you? You'd be such a miserly defence, and rather than one that's, you know, you're winning but you're leaking goals all over the place and you're sort of trying to kind of getting away with it each time. So I'm sure they'll be pleased up at Emily.
Yeah, while I mentioned at the top of the show about the date for your diary, Sunday the 11th of May for non-league finals day. We should also mention the non-league day. We're just 22nd of March. It's fast approaching. And again, it's just a celebration of non-league.
Yeah, brilliant bring up Dan, it kind of always feels, you know, I think they sort of, I can't remember, they announced it was early in the season. You think, oh, it's such a long way away, and suddenly it's kind of really fast approaching, and seeing lots of, you know, clubs kind of sort of talking about being at home on non-league day and starting to formulate their plans, and there's all sorts of ground hops going to be going on as well. And I think it's one of those annual sort of fixtures in the calendar now where, you know, we can all look forward to it. But it's also, you know, if you are already, you know, listening to the show, then you love non-league and you're out watching it, and, you know, try and take somebody down to a game on non-league day. What better reason than that, but better excuse than that, and to get someone down who maybe hasn't been to non-league football and show them what it's all about. Because, you know, we all know what great level it is. We all know why we find it so special and why we like, you know, watching it and being a part of it and feeling a part of it. And, you know, there's lots of other people who will feel the same, who maybe haven't been to their local non-league club yet. So definitely a great reason and a great excuse to tag someone, get someone to tag along with you to a game on non-league day, and, you know, sample the delights of this level of football.
Indeed. So another week of non-league football to be reported on. What can we expect to read in this weekend's non-league paper?
Well, Dean Brennan, as we say, we've got a column from Gregor Robertson. He's going to discuss three up, that situation. We've also caught up with Neil Reynolds at Warrington Rylands, who've been on a great run recently. And there's lots of match action, and that's going to be the big part of this weekend, isn't it? Where those points go by Saturday evening, and what that does to the table. So, yeah, plenty going on and lots to look forward to.
Thanks as ever then, Matt. Have a great weekend. Speak with you again soon.
Thanks, Tim.
That's it then for this week. Something to look out for next week, though. Talkie United released their new video series, Taking Flight, about the last 12 months in their club's history. Should be very interesting to watch. That goes live on their YouTube channel on Monday of next week. Don't forget, you can listen to Dave Anderson 2 and the return of the non-league gaffer tapes, where he meets former Sutton United boss Matt Gray. And, of course, you can get involved on social media, and we are there at Non-League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And as ever, find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Covercast, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe. Enjoy your football. Thank you and goodbye.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.